the winning sound of Network Sports.
And a very pleasant good evening to you, and welcome to another very special edition of Mason and Guests, heard on VOB 92.9 FM. You can call us at 4241790. You can send us a WhatsApp at 253-4679 or an email at cricketmason@yahoo.com. Mason and Guests is brought to an association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. Plenty lottery games to win. Scratch. Are you going something? So run and get your ticket. Scratch. Scratch and you could win it. Over 120,000 in cash. Scratch. Barbados Lottery. Scratch. So run and get your ticket. Scratch. Scratch and you could win it. Over 120,000 in cash. Scratch. Barbados Lottery. Scratch. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and you could win it. It's time to scratch your ticket. Scratch and Barbados Lottery.
Well, the West Indies side in New Zealand, many would have been hoping that they would have performed much better. That certainly was not the case. A situation where you would say in Bajan parlance, it didn't last as long as a snow cone. In fact, the two test matches could have ended, the first test and the second test, in 3 days. And the West Indies on both occasions losing by an innings. And the question we're asking on Mason and Guests tonight, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? Things, as the old people say, getting from bad to worse. And this is really not good news at all. Good evening. I'm Andrew Mason. And season's greetings to all. I've got, of course, my co-host, Dr. Andrew Ford. And already on Zoom, we've got the CEO of Cricket West Indies, Johnny Grave, who's going to spend some time with us. And, of course, Ian Bradshaw, the former West Indies all-rounder. We also want a little bit later on the programme to go around the region and talk to some of the journalists to get some reaction as to how the people in St. Kitts and in Jamaica and in Ghana feel about this cricket, because the reality is things are not looking good at all. We also hope to go to New Zealand and talk to Garfield Charles, the former all-rounder who would have watched the matches. I think he's going to be on with us pretty soon. But without any further ado, let's go to Antigua and talk to Johnny Grave, the CEO. Johnny, good evening to you. How are you?
Good evening, Andrew. I'm okay, thanks.
All right. And Johnny, again, the West Indies not performing in New Zealand. Well, I imagine, like most of us, you're disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, look, we knew it was going to be an extremely tough tour. New Zealand are one of the best sides in the world, particularly in home conditions. But you know, we went there with aspirations to win the T20 series and to compete in the Test series. And in both of those series, we didn't. So yeah, huge sense of disappointment from the results in New Zealand.
So where do we go from here, Johnny? That's the question I'm asking, from near and from far. Where do we go from here?
I think it's hard work, Andrew, at all levels. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going through a transformation of Cricket West Indies. We've got a really clear strategic plan, and you know, this isn't an overnight thing that's happened with West Indies cricket. And I think we've got to continue to have honest conversations throughout the whole system. West Indies cricket, this isn't a recent decline. We went there in 2017 and had exactly the same. We lost the T20s, the ODIs and the Test matches by similar margins in many respects. And we've been ranked ninth in the world, I think, for, you know, almost half a decade. So this isn't something that suddenly happened. We haven't gone from the top of the world before New Zealand tour to ninth. You know, New Zealand probably back in 2014 were in a similar position on and off the field, and it's taken hard work. It's taken a very clear strategic plan and vision to get New Zealand cricket from that point to where they are today. And Cricket West Indies need to do exactly the same. We've got, as I said, a plan to transform the organisation on and off the field that we're implementing. Clearly, COVID-19 and the pandemic has been difficult for us and a setback in many fronts. But the hard work continues, and that's what it's going to take. There's no easy fixes, as I said before on this show many times. There is no silver bullet that is going to suddenly go mean that we're going to be number one in the world tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's going to take hard work throughout the entire system, all stakeholders working together to get Cricket West Indies and our teams back to the top of the world.
Just before we go to Ian, can you share some of those plans with us on Mason and Guess? Give us a Christmas gift.
Well, look, I mean, we started with, you know, a selection task force that reviewed the selection system and processes, bringing, you know, more statistics, HR principles and practices to our selection of our teams, including the establishment of a women's panel specifically for the women's team. We've had a financial review that put forward a number of recommendations in the PKF review. We've obviously seen and are discussing now with shareholders and stakeholders the Webby report that talks about governance review, and we're about to embark on an organisational review that will look at our HR and IT systems and processes, as well as a review of the entire franchise system that's now been in place for four years or so. You would have had Chris Brabazon on this show and Jimmy Adams talking about the investment we made in coaching and coach education. We had over 100 female coaches going through that system a few weeks ago, which is now our own coaching courses delivered in the Caribbean by Caribbean coaches. It's something that we own. In the past, we'd relied on either the Cricket Australia or ECB coaching program and certificates, which obviously, you know, isn't our own and came at additional cost because we'd have to fly in those staff coaches to deliver them. We talked before about the investments and improvements we made in sports science and medicine from fitness, but are we where we want to be? No, we're not. We need to continue to push the whole sports science and medicine program within the West Indies system, not just at international level, but at franchise level too, and ensure that we've got our best players available for our selectors, that we are appropriately managing injury and injury prevention and recovery, and continue to drive fitness standards throughout the region. So, and you know that our facilities, if we're honest, are not on par with other international teams, so that our players are not playing and practicing in the best facilities and that other modern international players would be. So we know we've made a massive investment in buying the Stanford Cricket Ground in Antigua, the Coolidge Cricket Ground that we want to develop into our world-class high-performance centre, and that's a big part of our strategic plan. So, as I said before, none of these things are going to suddenly be a magic wand to improvements overnight, but it's going to take continued investment, real focus on the strategic plan of what we need to do to get back to the top, to produce better players, to produce winning teams, and we need to continue to focus on that.
Mm-hmm. Good evening to you, Ian. Season's greetings. Your overall assessment of the West Indies tour of New Zealand? Surprised?
Hey, good night, Andrew. Are you hearing me well?
We are hearing you loud and clear.
Lovely. Good night to you. Good night to all of your many guests and Johnny, who's joined you as well. Like every other cricket fan, in the West Indies, I'm really disappointed with the performance. We have not stood up and give a good account of ourselves, and I think that's the most critical thing that is worrying me is the manner in which we've lost this series. We would have seen in prior series there were some positive steps I thought we would have taken, but in terms of our attitude, in terms of just doing the small things better. And when you take a team like New Zealand, who I do not, if we had to look at their team, maybe not a bunch of world beaters, certainly not the Coleys and the Steve Smiths and so forth that you will see dominate the headlines with other teams. But what this team have done, what we can learn so much from, is that they're doing the little things well often, Andrew. Mm-hmm. And that is what we have to improve on, doing the little things well often. It is not good enough that after 50 tests or so, our bowlers are not consistent enough on the first morning of a test, mm-hmm, to be consistently putting the ball in front of a batsman. Mm-hmm. It's not good enough. And we have to be honest with that. It's not good enough that you go to New Zealand and the excuse for the batsman could be that it's swinging, it's difficult conditions. We've been going to New Zealand for over 50 years, and the conditions have not changed. And I appreciate the fact that the New Zealand played well, but I am more concerned is that our performances as a professional unit was not consistent enough to merit the representation of West Indies cricket, which we must hold dear.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Ford, good evening to you. Season's greetings.
Good night to all of you, and good night to the listeners. Can you hear me okay, Andrew?
Yes, loud and clear, Doc.
Okay, the first question isn't mine. It's from a listener called Basil. I think, Johnny, you've outlined all of the accomplishments of Cricket West Indies internally in terms of restructuring the selection and acquiring the ground and other things. But that's partially answered Basil's question regarding what we need to do to improve the quality of cricket in the region. But what's missing is the actual nuts and bolts cricket strategies that really come from the director of cricket and other things, camps and other things that actually improve the players' skills. You mentioned coaches and all that. What about the other plans, Johnny? Because it would seem like the administration thus far has been doing a lot of work in-house. The brand hasn't improved, the results haven't improved, and the cricket, some may argue, has stagnated or gotten worse. So in addition to the plethora of things you manage and articulated so beautifully, I'd like you to mention some actual cricket strategies that we are unaware of to improve the standard of cricket in the region.
Well, as I said, look, we're making a big investment in coaching. We've got forums now where the director of cricket will host all the regional head coaches, trying to get coordination of our cricketing programs, making sure that we know exactly what's happening on the ground in the territories in between tours. Obviously, we can bring players together in advance of test series and ODI and T20 series, but it's also what happens in between and when players aren't at international level that's equally important. And the director of cricket, Jimmy Adams, and his high performance team are working with those six regional franchises to improve the system there, which is in all aspects: sports science and medicine, coaching, facilities. We've got to improve every aspect of our cricket. There's no one aspect that we're looking to improve over another. It's a comprehensive improvement across every single facet. You can't go to anywhere in the world, let alone New Zealand, who are tied at the top of the world rankings in Test cricket, and drop seven catches and expect to have good performances. So we're all bitterly disappointed by what happened in New Zealand, and the players and coaching staff are equally disappointed. But do I think the solution is, changing a coach here or there or changing a player here or there? No, I don't. I really don't think there are simple solutions. I think this team can play better. And as Ian said, they needed to represent the region and perform better in New Zealand. And if they'd done so, I think that the results may have been the same, but we certainly would have competed far more equally at the test match and pushed New Zealand harder. And I think that's what's disappointing to all of us, and certainly me, is that we didn't push New Zealand harder for them to earn victories in that test series in particular. But I don't think there's any simple solution to our problems. As I said, I think we are trying to transform West Indies cricket from grassroots all the way up to the professional level. We're trying to improve the system. And we can blame individuals if we want. We can call for one player to be replaced by another if we want. What I'm saying is, from where I sit, we need to improve the entire system, and we've got to make further changes to professionalise West Indies cricket. And going from that amateur system to a truly world-class professional system is going to take an awful lot of hard work, investment and time and focus. And what I want our cricket department to be is focused on improving the system, not looking to change one person or one coach here or there.
Okay. Well, I just make a comment before going on to my next question. What I would say is that we haven't really heard have any plans to fix specific deficiencies? I'll mention a few before I go on. One is that West Indian bowlers go all over the world. We watch the opposition swing and seam the ball, yet our bowlers have not been able to improve in the swing department for sure, and certainly in the seam department. We also look at the batsmen and we see many of them playing across the front pad. And thirdly, we do not have a world-class spin bowler. Devendra Bishu has had the most five wicket hauls of any spin bowler since Lance Gibbs and the others. We've not heard of any special camps to develop the spin bowlers or to reinvigorate or to get someone like Bishu back on track or to work on the others specifically recently. So I'll just leave that there and go on to the next question, which is the West Indies have been the most traveled team during the COVID, and we've received accolades and thanks from all the teams, but from a financial standpoint, with us not getting any revenue, not having any TV rights, can you tell me, outside of the team being shown up to be deficient, what are the benefits to the West Indies going on more tours than anyone else and going to Bangladesh in January? How have we benefited from our sojourn during COVID?
Well, look, the first thing to say is touring is not an option. It's not something where we sit down and say, hey, do we want to go to England or do we want to go to New Zealand? Touring is a contractual obligation under the ICC Futures Tours program, and we signed up to that. So the first point is that, as I said, that there's no option to touring, it's an obligation. And so once it's safe to do so, and we made it very, very clear at the start of the pandemic that we would try and go on tour and try and fulfill our obligations, as did everyone else in world cricket. And we've had a very robust medical and operational plan with the best practitioners in the Caribbean, working with our counterparts at the ECB in New Zealand and now Bangladesh to ensure that the players are safe within, you know, what is, you know, the first of its kind. We were the first sport to bring the true meaning of biosecure sport back. We've now had the England bubble with the men and women. We were the first multi-team tournament to come back with the Caribbean Premier League, with players and coaches flying all around the world into Trinidad to have that biosecure bubble in Port of Spain. We've been pioneers by the first team to play in New Zealand. So again, look, it's not a choice where we can pick and choose. Mm-hmm. It's an obligation, and we take that obligation very seriously. I think what has been commercially good for us is, you know, clearly the what we've done is provide confidence to the broadcast market that live cricket can be delivered, that contracts can be honoured, and we're on the brink of signing, you know, five significant long-term TV rights deals that will provide much-needed revenue and security to us between now and the end of 2024. So, you know, these tours have been important. Bangladesh is the last away tour in the run of obligations that we have under the FTP. And then we're going to have an unprecedented amount of Caribbean cricket, all being well. We're going to host Sri Lanka in March. We're going to host South Africa, followed by Australia, followed by Pakistan, leading into the Caribbean Premier League. So whilst we've had a run of 6 months or so on the road, we're going to have, you know, in return, an unprecedented amount of cricket in the Caribbean from February, we hope, when we kickstart the Super 50 in Antigua. We're going to have an unprecedented amount of international cricket at home. So, that's the sort of the simple answer to your question, Dr. Ford.
Okay, Doc, just before you come in with the next question, Doc, I just want to welcome Dr. Ashkaman Singh, because we're going to obviously look at the whole question of Bangladesh, and he would have gone there as well. So we're going to be, of course, switching pretty soon to that. Good to see you, Doctor, looking as young as ever. And of course, we also want to go across to New Zealand and speak to Garfield Charles, who, haven't seen the West Indies, is telling me he wants to come into retirement. Yes, Doc.
Yeah, getting back to the, Donny, the contracts that you have, pending contracts, I know that you can't really speak about negotiations while they're on, But can you give us a scale of what you think the reduction would be of a pre-COVID versus a post-COVID contract that you're working on? And also, other boards have been able to articulate the losses of revenue during COVID. And initially, when we spoke to you at the beginning of COVID, when we didn't know how long it would have lasted, you had expressed some confidence that financially things would be as the status quo, because we weren't having any home tours, so we wouldn't get any losses. And then subsequently, we heard of a 50% reduction in some of the wages and that sort of thing. Can you bring us up to date with the financial situation of Cricket West Indies in a succinct way?
I can try. Look, it's a very difficult time for us financially, as it is any organisation currently trying to navigate their way through this pandemic. What I would say to answer the first part of that in terms of the media rights, we did a valuation back in 2019 of our media rights, and we provided ourselves with three valuations, a low, mid and high. The five deals that we've taken so far to the board of directors are all either at the high or above the high valuation. So in terms of the deals that we're on the brink of concluding, there's no pre or post COVID reduction in value. As I said, they're all at the high or above high valuation that we did back in 2019, which is clearly positive. And obviously subject to those final negotiations, we expect to extend player and retained umpires contracts by 6 months from January and revert everyone onto full pay and full funding from January onwards. So the finances are due to improve. And look, I could give you sound bites in loss of revenue, but ultimately, you know, what's happened and transpired under COVID is, yes, there's been a loss of revenue, but we've also, you know, we've not been operating cricket throughout the region and hosting tours. So there's been an enormous saving on tours and tournaments in the short term. And yes, we had to do the unprecedented action of putting everyone on half pay and half funding from July for what would have now been 6 months, you know, which was unfortunate. But at the end of the day, we are sitting here having not lost, you know, or made any redundancies. So, you know, I'm not saying that the half funding and half pay has been easy for any of us. But at the same time, we've had to make tough decisions to protect the organisation. And hopefully, on the back of touring England, on the back of touring New Zealand, where we hope to be coming out of COVID, as I said, with good media rights, revenues secured, ICC funding is maintained, and therefore we can continue to get back on track with home tours starting from March with the visit of Sri Lanka, and then continue to be very focused on that strategic plan that I outlined earlier.
Mm-hmm. All right. Of course, we've been keeping our good friend Garfield Charles waiting. We just want to get an analysis from you, Garfield. You were there in New Zealand. Surprised by the West Indies gutless performance? Were you expecting more, Garfield?
Am I on? I've got my...
Yes, you're very much on.
Okay, awesome. I think just like everybody else, I think I was disappointed with the fact that we didn't compete harder. My hope was that we would compete harder, but I did say prior to the tour that it would come down to how well our batsmen handle the conditions with the swinging ball in New Zealand, and that sort of proved true. Quite disappointed with the top order display. Actually, we had glimpses of guys who sort of looked as though they came to fight, but not enough of it, and we never put together a complete performance in any day, much less in innings, I don't think. And if you want to win games, you've got to go with the momentum shifts in the game, which we just, when the momentum had shifted our way, especially in that second test, we just didn't we didn't capitalize. Yeah, we dropped a man four times who went out, you know,
yes,
just
to make 100,
who got 150.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought well, the main difference between the two tests was Williamson not being available for that second test. I think his first innings was was a classic test match innings. He is a world class performer, but his application and just the way he went about his business at the crease was the example for how you should bat on the wicket. But when he wasn't there for the second test, the guys should have been fired up and licking their lips. And we did capitalize early. Mm-hmm. But like I said, when we just dropped nickels four times before he'd gotten to any substantial score. So that would have meant, that would have put a completely different spin on the game. Not saying we would have won, but definitely would have put a different spin on the game. I thought the bowlers first test we just missed our length. Just could have bowled should have bowled a tad fuller. Gave the ball a chance to do something. But most of the bowlers sort of held their own. I think Gabriel had a good series. He bowled with good pace and good rewards. I thought all the bowlers did well. I think Jason Holder probably was most guilty of not bowling the right length.
Mm-hmm.
He does have the ability to swing the balls. Very impressed with the debutante. Jamar Holder, just love the easy smooth pace, and he's got good wrist action. Mm-hmm. So I think in future there's no reason why he shouldn't be able to move the ball around, especially in conditions like these out here. Yeah, so disappointing that we didn't fight. We couldn't put when we bowled well, we dropped catches and didn't bat well. When we showed a bit of resistance, well, the top order never really showed resistance. So we didn't bowl as well as we could. So I think there are some positives, but like everybody else, disappointed that we couldn't put up a better fight, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, Garfield, I want to thank you because I know you don't have a lot of time, but I want to thank you very much indeed for coming through and being with us and giving you an assessment. You're there in New Zealand, and Merry Christmas to you and to yours. Come back to Guyana, please.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you.
You're coming home for Christmas?
Merry Christmas to you all and all the listeners.
All right. Of course, we'd love to see you in Guyana.
Have a COVID Christmas, Andrew.
All right.
Merry Christmas to you,
thank you very
too.
Much indeed. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Charles,
God bless everybody.
In New Zealand. Bye. Of course, when we come back, we're going to be talking to Dr. Askar Man Singh. We're also going to be joined by noted journalist Fazir Muhammad. But of course, this is after our break. Mason and guests brought to you in association with our very good friends at Barbados Lottery, promoting youth sport and culture.
When the double draw, you're playing with the mega ball. It's tripling, you can triple your winnings just for one more dollar. Bronze mega ball,
30,000.
Silver mega ball,
40,000.
Gold mega ball,
50,000.
More and more and more, you're winning. Another dollar, and when you win, you holler. That's how you triple it with the mega ball.
Make your winnings even bigger. Call for the mega ball today. Promotion ends December 26, 2020.
The mega ball.